amazing, amazing bass beat brought to you by Johnny Crowley, good friend. I wanted to thank everybody for joining us for the first show of The Morning After. You know, I was a guest on the Heritage Radio Network a few times and talked about the food industry, and I was really upset. You know, and I'm upset with places like the Food Network that, you know, don't really talk about what really happens and the ideas and the people that work in the food industry. And, you know, it's just all the fluff that's put out there, you know. And I just wanted to have a little bit of an honesty show, and I decided to go to a bunch of people and create it. That show is called The Morning After. Today we're going to have some amazing guests. I have in studio a good friend and an amazing person that works in the food industry. Her name's Andy Llewellyn. I have a celebrity call in today. Their assistant just called to confirm. And so that's going to happen. They're not going to flake out. I was a little worried about that. Then also our sponsor halfway through the show is going to call in from Savorian Wines, Chad Turnbull. He's actually he might be in studio. We might interview him directly if he graces us with his presence. But he's one of the guys that put up all the money. On top of the fact of a movie review from... It's called The Wrath of Khan. He's going to review a movie called Cocktail, a movie that we're all familiar with. The movie Tom Cruise won't talk about a lot, but gives him credit for most of his success. And then we have a late call-in for the hot job of the week from the website 86list.com. And Laura will call in and tell us about a hot job of the week that's going on in New York City. But first, looking directly across from me is a friend and fellow colleague, someone I've known for about close to a decade now, Andy Llewellyn.
Hello.
thank you for one, coming to my party last week where I hosted everyone that was contributing to the show. And I wanted to have you as our first sort of in-studio person. And the idea of the in-studio person will be somebody that I respect and work with in the industry that will be here for the entire show to be my co-host.
And I, you, Jason, as someone I also respect in the industry, I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you. Now, Annie, we met years ago. We were working at a place called 205th.
205th. What can you say about 205th? Well,
what can I say about it? That it was, I always say it was kind of my Rikers Island of restaurants. Like, I became a man out there.
I mean, the first night I worked at 205th as a cocktail waitress, a member of the NYPD was shot outside.
Yeah, we try not to focus on that stuff on the morning after. We try to focus on the better things, like the cover of the Post today, the death dive.
That's also kind of in line with what I just said.
Yeah, I'm looking for something a little more, you know, fun there, like the death dive, like this, a P-51 Mustang crashing into a group of people. As you can see, I'm holding it across from you. I don't know about you, and I don't even want to get into air shows per se, but I don't know. I've never been invited to an air show, but if I was ever invited to an air show, I probably would never go, because it seems every death...
You can go to an air show in Red Hook right now if you want.
Yeah, that's the race thing. But, you know, every frigging time somebody has a frigging air show, there's always a death. I mean...
It's the same with, like, the circus.
Yeah, there's always something. But
people are always taking chances.
But, yeah, this thing, I guess this plane crashed into everybody. I don't know. It was like a real bummer reading on the Post, because usually I go to write... there's no way to... When I buy the Post, I go right to page six.
The Post is a sensational thing.
I go right to page six. But normally the first page doesn't bring me down that much. But when you see a plane 4 inches away from people that are about to kill, it makes me really upset.
On a lighter note, jeez.
On a lighter note, let's talk about...
Don't ever start any conversation with the New York Post.
Whoa. I disagree with that only because I find all of my information from life from the page
I find
six.
My fashion tips from the New York Post because they cover it very closely.
I do, and you are very fashionably dressed today. We were commenting at the bar, our sort of photographer here, Ben Jaslik, who's doing all the photography here, commented and congratulated you on your... I don't know, after Fashion Week, you're very fashionable. What are you wearing?
Well,
right now?
I always wear blazers because generally, as a woman in the workforce, I feel like blazers make you people take you more seriously. But this particular blazer I got in Copenhagen. And we can loop that back into the food scene, because Copenhagen has an amazing food scene right now.
And you were there, and I know we won't even comment on Red Zeppi that much, but we both kind of know him a little bit. But can you talk a little bit about when you were in Copenhagen and like what is going on beyond?
Well, in Copenhagen, they're all about like it's it's much more back to the land than we are here in New York. In Copenhagen, it's about the forager who goes out and finds like the mushroom or the truffle that you're serving on your menu that night, right?
Okay.
And it's also about representing like that, or the meat that you're eating, representing that alongside what that animal would have eaten. So the plate you might get might be deer, but you're also going to have like a plate of
I call it venison,
like venison or elk meat or whatever type of. Or reindeer, for that matter.
Well,
and then the grass that it would have eaten and the mushrooms it might have foraged on. And you're gonna have that all on one plate. And the way that it's presented is also going to remind you of the environment that that animal lived in and survived in.
So the plate you get, you'll get all that stuff on the plate.
Well, let's say you're getting a vegetable. You're getting a plate of, let's say, root vegetables.
That's, I, you know, as much as I love this, is the reason why I did this radio show, because I love this stuff. But it's also a, like, I mean, this is stuff that's, is anyone trying to do this in New York?
I don't know. Is anyone doing like?
Well, I know a guy called Evan the Forager. He works out of Maine, and he's a forager, but he's not a chef.
I guess Blue Hill.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if Dan Barber is, you know, if the amount of traveling he does on a plane doesn't cancel out the amount of sustainable kind of cooking he does, you know, is
that's not really fair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is I talking out loud? Well, that's just a little touch of, you know, it's just, I mean, I understand. And
they're probably the only ones who are doing like the holistic sustainability thing right now is Blue Hill.
100%. But I feel like it's so hard to do. And it's the amount of like time you would put into all that stuff. It's just really, it's really tough to do. But I wanted to move on a little bit in terms of your career.
We're going to talk about me. That's my favorite subject.
No, I mean, I have to introduce my sort of my in-studio person, my co-host, and I like to sort of interview them a little bit. And when I met you, we kind of like we were both at really different. We're at the same period of our lives, but we both went in separate directions, and we kind of came and met up again. I remember you were going back to school, and I was sort of like kind of in a weird area. But then you decided to come.
Well, I had moved here from my undergraduate. I was in Philadelphia working in the service industry in Philadelphia at a great place called Notting Head. It's a brewery. Check it out.
Yeah.
I came here and I worked at 205th, which for all the like, you know, edgy things about it, is a good place with good people. Great, you know. It was a great place to start out, and I met you,
yes,
Jason.
Yes.
And then I had a rough first 6 months in New York, and I wanted to leave.
And what did I tell you about? What did I tell you about the year thing?
You said, "Give it a year, go to Prospect Park, go see some bands and play in Prospect Park, and enjoy the summer, and then talk to me in a year, and we'll decide if you should leave or not." And I'm still here.
And she's tearing, by the way. But you know,
I'm tearing up.
It's true. I always working as a manager in restaurants. I would always tell anyone that came here, from one that I cared about and one I thought that would have a huge future, whether they were going into food or not, I would say, listen, stay in New York for a year. Just give it a year. I guarantee it'll work out. And I remember telling that to you.
It's hard, though. Like, you don't I mean, like, when I first moved here, I was making less than a living wage. You know, you just have to come. You have to stick it out. You have to share a room if you have to share a room. And then one day you'll realize why you did that.
Well, now, if anyone's any family members are listening, she's with an amazing gentleman. His name is Will. This guy, if my sister wasn't married, Nicole, if you're listening, I would actually sort of put him and say, hey.
No, he's taken.
Yeah, he's taken. But
he's home watching the Eagles game. Go Eagles.
We try to shy away from sports. I mean, even though Stephen Kahn, doing the Wrath of Kahn thing, is wearing a Ravens thing.
Our movie reviewer is here in studio wearing a Ravens what is that called?
Well, I don't know. I'm surprised Roberta just let you in with that jersey on. But anyway, I just,
no, when he walked in, you could be like, that was definitely a person. That's a person who lives in Manhattan.
Yeah, and you can say Murray Hill to be honest. But and then we came and we met again, and Annie was working in PR for a while, and I remember you were sort of assigned to James Franco for a while. Not to talk about that, but I remember we had become.
He's great.
No, but I remember we became friends.
If you ever
want
to be inspired, have a conversation with James.
Oh my God, you're officially kick her out of the studio.
No, he's the real deal. TDR.
All right. Well, I will allow, for
the
you
real deal
for you showing up here. I will allow that statement. But anyway, so then we met again, and then we became friends, and you went to work for a couple of chefs that are doing some really cool, I would say, righteous things here in the U.S.
The most righteous.
And we became friends again, and then I had a party about a week ago, and I asked you to come and contribute to the show because I have a lot of respect
for
you.
And I was honored.
And thank you for being here. Once again, I'm in the studio with Annie Llewellyn, a friend and fellow contributor and restaurateur and writer and a bunch of other things, which we'll talk about later on. on. We have a really good show today. Today's the first show of the morning after. I have a bunch of people. One of them is Michael Colomeco, who's going to be our main guest.
And Michael. Woo, woo.
Whoop, what?
Whoop, whoop, Michael Colomeco. So PBS.
Michael Colomeco does a radio show on 710 as a PBS show, and somebody I listened to, somebody my mom was like, you're listening to Michael Colomeco? I was like, yeah, of course. I told you to listen to him. I was like, Mom, I'm doing inventories at work. I have to listen to him. And then I started to listen to him more and more, and I never want to admit to my mom that this was really an interesting kind of show. And then I ran into him one day in the city, and then I did the show, and I asked him. Hence, I spoke to him a few days ago, and he's going to come in. He's basically one of these guys that are in the city that knows everybody. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. We're going to go into a break in about 30 seconds, and then we're going to come back. We're going to get into a bunch of things. So one, we're going to have our little celebrity guest call in. We're going to have the Wrath of Khan, and then we're going to talk to Michael Colomeco. Thanks, guys. Morning after.
Feel like a plastic bag drifting through the wind, wanting to start again. Do you ever feel so paper thin, like a house of cards, one blow from caving in? Chance for you, 'cause there's a spark in you. You just gotta ignite the light and let
yo just let it shine.
All right, Katy Perry. But the most redeeming thing about Katy Perry is her old man.
Well, that's the whole thing.
Love him.
Well, that's the whole thing about Katy Perry is that she. That whole song is about her inspiration from him. Thank you, Jack, for giving the host
Russell
of the show
Brand
some volume back to his thing. I couldn't hear myself. It made me really nervous. Thank you. But no, that whole song, come on, get out of here. Like, so it's so bad that I played that song. It's not a big deal. Whatever. All right, so I have to get serious for a second because there's a lot of logistics that were involved in this first guest. A lot of favors were called in. I don't know if anyone knows my credentials.
And I'm sweating.
You're not. So there's a lot of things I had to sign.
I'm coming hot and
knows me or has Googled me, we'll see that I had a little bit of a film career, not in sort of the back of the house and the production aspect of it. One of the people I got to meet was a gentleman that's going to be our guest. I think he's tapped in right now. I just wanted to say thank you, sir, for doing this, and also say this is amazing. I wanted to thank Matthew McConaughey for tapping in. Matt, you there? Are you tapped in?
Yeah, I'm here. Good afternoon.
Hey, listen, first of all, I have to say thank you, and also repeating myself 100 times because, first of all, three girls had an orgasm in the studio just now.
It's still happening. It's still happening.
And also, on top of the fact, I wanted to say that we met on a film called as The Two for the Money, which was a movie you did with Al Pacino in Brooklyn, and I was a PA on that movie. And just to legitimize myself, can you talk a little bit about how we met and sort of became friends and stuff?
A lot of that movie we did in Dumbo, actually. We filmed a lot of that there. And I was very sick for about 2 weeks of shooting. And my assistant at the time was a young man named Bradley. And I remember I had sent Bradley out basically just to find... I don't get sick often, but when I do, I have a bit of an elixir.
Elixir?
Just kind of like a remedy, I guess.
Okay.
That I put together, and Bradley was having trouble finding most things. So at the time, he said, well, one PA lives in the neighborhood. And I said, great.
That was me, by the way. That was me, by the way.
You brought the elixir?
Wait. Okay. Sorry.
I want to hear everyone who's not cured. I want to know if he's cured.
Just take him with you, because I kind of need this stuff. And I remember he took Jason out, and he came back, and he said, he doesn't know where to get this stuff. And I said, I thought you said living in Brooklyn. He said, well, he doesn't look like a guy who knows where to find wild cherry bark.
Well, wait, Matt, just wait. For two things. One, you, I was a PA on that shoot, and I couldn't figure out where to find that stuff. But I eventually we found it, and I I have to thank SOS Chef for like a million people I called, and they're a purveyor. They're no longer in business, but they had founded. But it was funny because I got sent down on something like, it's like Matt's. Then everyone talk, you know, when you're on the set of the movie, everyone talks about like Matthew or Matt, but it was like Matt's sick, you know, whatever. And everybody's like, oh, is he LA's sick or is he sick? I was like, what does that mean? He's like, no, he's really sick. So we went out.
I was going down. We had a long night shoot coming up, so that's why that was the problem. It was a Sunday, and it was late in the day in Brooklyn. It was badly. He kept coming back with nothing.
So
I didn't have any.
Well, can you vouch for me to all my food people and my procurement and say we did come through and find your stuff?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, right.
And also. Absolutely.
You're a real forager.
Yeah. And so, Matt, before I have to ask this because I want it to be like real, since I have my own radio show, I have to do this. What even though through the power of the internet and stuff, what time is it in LA right now? Even though I know.
It's like when I used to, when I would call my mother. It was like her favorite question for like the first year. about 3:15.
Well, it's 3:15 here in East Coast. Where what is it? That's where it is here. But what is it in LA? 12:15.
Oh, in LA it's 12:15.
Oh yeah. Also, is there anything else going on? Annie's dying. Annie. All right. Matt, my co-host was going to ask you one question. Sorry, she's.
Oh, okay.
He told me it was loud to talk to you because he was worried that I would just mumble over my words like I had marbles in my mouth, which I am doing. But I love you. You're the most beautiful thing on the television.
All right, so she just said that.
Are you The Wedding Planner is my favorite Matthew McConaughey film because I love love.
Are you serious?
In New York, and I love J-Lo, and I think that it's so sweet,
and
he looks the most handsome.
And you got mad at my Katy Perry song?
Okay, right. But yeah, Katy Perry is different than Matthew McConaughey. Is like the epitome of handsomeness.
Get your question. He's on a schedule.
All right, sorry for getting off schedule,
okay,
Matthew. That's all. I just wanted to gush for a moment.
That wasn't a
Matt,
gush.
Matt, I just.
But, I mean, that's okay, but that's Matt. Fun. No, that's great. I'm glad you like that.
I wanted to thank you for calling. I know you're on a tight schedule, and I just want to say
I appreciate it. One of the things I love about doing this is just basically. You meet people. You meet a lot of great people, and it's just nice to catch back up with somebody. So, congrats on your show. Man.
Before you check out, what's your favorite restaurant in New York right now?
My favorite restaurant in New York right now. It's kind of tough.
Because you're in and out. I mean, you're always in and out. Whenever, and the sad part is, Matt, people won't believe this because I tell them, and they think I'm like this old fluff guy. Is I always create a. You know, like oh no, McConaughey.
I
want to
know what Matthew's favorite restaurant is.
I'm not cutting him off, Matt. 2 seconds. Sorry.
I'll tell you. I went to last time I was there. I went to ABC Kitchen. I loved it.
Yes.
No, because you're all you're into that. I know you loved it, but you're all into that. You're into that stuff. Come on. You're a vegetarian. Because remember the last time you.
Well, oh, Matthew, I mean, you're a vegetarian.
You eat healthy.
Maybe I should be a vegetarian.
No, I'm not. I try to keep it limited as far as, animal products. But no, I'm not. I mean, I'll cook butt chicken. And we did 2 for the money. I made Al Pacino butt chicken. And it was absolutely one of my favorite meals. So I'm not a vegetarian. But I do lean towards lots of...
So Matt, the producer's looking at me with scary eyes right now because I know how much time you have left. But one, I just want to say this to my sister or my mom or whoever's listening. Well, I hope in 2 or 3 years if we get some traction with the show, it's going to be me, you, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Lance going on some random bike ride, and okay magazine is going to pick it up.
I want to come.
You'll come. But thanks again for taking time out of schedule. I know you're working on a couple of movies right now.
I'm very glad I got to.
Can I ask you a question? Can we check in with you in a few weeks and just a few months?
I hope you do. Do the same thing. Just use the email and. It's just good to hear from you, buddy, and I wish you the best with your show.
Thanks a lot, bro. I appreciate it.
Oh, of course.
Thanks,
man.
My pleasure. Once again, Matthew McConaughey, I don't need to give him 20 different plugs, but thanks, Matt. We'll talk to you soon. We're actually going to go right into a segment we're going to call The Wrath of Khan. Hold on. We're going to get the music. Yes, here we go.
And I wish to go on hurting you.
Yes, The Wrath of Khan. This is,
I shall leave you as you left
yes,
me.
Yes, this is our movie.
I shall let her maroon for all eternity in the center of a dead planet.
Oof, you don't want
buried
a bad review.
Alive,
You don't want to get a bad review with this guy.
Con!
Ah! Con! Here we are. Here we are. Here we are. You may have had made a movie, but it came out 10 or 15 years ago. That does not matter because Stephen Con is armed with a Netflix queue. And in his Netflix queue is something I asked him to review two or three weeks ago in terms of just getting out there. And the movie I asked him to do is Cocktail. Stephen Con in studio, say hello.
Hello, everyone. How are you today, Jason?
Hi, Con.
Hello.
And Annie. So, Con, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to give the floor to you. Please, tell me about Cocktail, this movie that came out with Tom Cruise in the late 80s. I love this movie. Do not mess it up.
Whoa, wait.
It came out in 1988, and like so many other films that came out in this era, Cocktail was a hit with me when I was about 12 years old. It used to be on TV all the time, and it was one of those movies that, you know, and at no matter what point you caught it at, you always had to finish it. You know, it was just, I was so drawn to easily accessible films like that. And
great, who cares about it?
Tom Cruise dancing really makes me uncomfortable.
All right, let's get the nitty-gritty of this movie, because this review started a little boring right now. Talk to me about Cocktail. What's going on with this movie? Because I love it, and what's up?
Well, basically,
you love
back
it?
Then, back then, when I first saw it back then, well, everybody loves it.
No, uh-uh.
Oh, yeah, you do. Okay, so basically, when I saw it back then, I didn't know anything about it besides Tom Cruise and Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah.
I'd seen Tom Cruise be like a fighter pilot and a race car driver. And when I saw Behind the Bar, I was like, okay, well, can't miss with this, right? And this was before he was, started his serious acting with like Rain Man and
I don't know if you saw The Outsiders, but to me, that's when Tom Cruise.
Stay Gold, Pony Boy.
He didn't really have that big of a part in that.
Well, yeah. Well, guess what? That's when he did the movie with Sean Penn called Chaps.
Chaps.
Or the military movie he did with Sean Penn. That's when.
Nobody knows it. Okay, and when I saw, it was when I was that age, I saw drinking and partying, and I was like, kind of drawn to it. It's kind of interestingly provocative, and like I'd hear about kids in grades above me.
All right, can you give the review?
what happens in this movie?
What do you think about this movie? I don't care about your way you
Well, I used to like it a lot. Now I think it sucks.
So there's these two guys in this movie, and they have a dream, right?
Yeah, cocktails and dreams.
They want to open a bar. I mean, one of them is English, kind of, but it's a fake English.
He's actually technically that actor is Australian, and Brian Brown is his name.
He's really the only thing worthwhile in this movie. His dialogue is really good, and his.
The ladies
Con,
are good.
Review this movie.
I'm reviewing
it. I know you're nervous.
It.
I know it's the first show. All right. Review this movie already, or I'm going to kick you out of the studio.
I love films like this where everything happens so fast.
What does that mean?
Every minute should be, about a week. Tom Cruise, his first night in the bar.
He's worked for like 2 weeks. All right, fine.
His first night in the bar, it's like hell. It's a nightmare. The waitresses are screaming at him, and he gets like the cash register comes out and hits him in the forehead.
Yeah. What song is playing? The next cut,
he's like brilliant. He's charming, great. He's the best bartender ever.
What?
And everybody
and
loves
what?
Him.
And then what? I mean, and then so then Coughlin, who's
so
the
I want to see. I want to see the hard work and everything that it took to get to be such a great bartender. I want to see. Fruit cutting. I want to see cake changing. I want to see arguments with the bar back. You know what I'm saying?
I think the waitresses bust their own tables in that movie, but I don't know.
It is at a TGI Fridays.
It's at a TGI Fridays in Times Square.
Yeah. Well, oh, wow. That's
it's that TGI Fridays. Yeah. And it's the same one. It's still there.
Well, you know what? It's funny. All right, so Con, go on. What happens after that? So he gets some success. Coughlin becomes his buddy.
Coughlin becomes his buddy.
And then they decide.
But then they have a little fight over a woman.
Yeah.
Played by Gina Gershon.
Gina Gershon, one of her first movies. And they get in a fight over that woman because, he basically. He falls in love with the Tom Cruise character, and just to kind of like he's pissed off that he's hooking up with this other girl, so
right.
he hooks
well,
up
he
with
thinks
her.
He's making a mistake, I think.
Yeah.
Get to Jamaica,
right. And then he has this grand idea about going to Jamaica and opening or not opening their own bar, but making a ton of money so they can come back to New York and he can start making
Jamaica
all
was hot back then. Everyone went to Jamaica.
It's very south of Soho.
This is also interesting to note. Everybody that they seem to meet at the bar in Jamaica once they're there is from New York.
Well, that's thing. Annie's right is that Jamaica was in the late '80s. Are we talking about
sandals? It was the biggest deal.
We're talking about sandals, and we're talking about Club Med and stuff like
but
that.
But it just so happens that you know.
I mean, what did you think somebody from Jamaica would be hanging out at a bar in Jamaica?
No, it's white people.
There's more cities in the U.S.
So sum up the movie. Since you've already wasted 5 minutes of my show, sum up the movie.
Sum up the movie.
Get to the part where the chick
basically
gets pregnant.
Which wasn't predictable at all, right? And
actually, well,
I don't know if you know this, but you can't buy condoms in Jamaica. Sorry.
Not even lambskin?
No. You can buy weed, but you can't buy condoms.
Loved it when I was 12 years old, but now it's the most predictable and cliche movie. One of the most predictable and cliche movies I've ever seen. The acting is okay.
It's okay.
But In the end, it's like what it's supposed to, you know, it's supposed to teach you about like materialism and like pursuit of wealth and whatnot. That's like
the 80s.
Well, right. That's like a topical thing in the 80s.
Right. But the takeaway from this film, the big reveal is that the girl is actually very wealthy, which
I didn't know that.
But you know
she knocks her up. Then he finds out she's super wealthy, which is his pursuit of wealth.
So basically, there's a scene at the end where he chooses love. Where he chooses love over money by ripping up his dad's check.
Also, is the concierge actually John Malkovich? Can someone just tell me because it looks like John Malkovich?
By the way, our sponsor is writing me letters right now through the fucking thing, and he is pissed. Con, can you wrap this up and ask me
at the end he has his own bar, Cocktails and Dreams. You know his friend Brian kills himself. Very, very surprising. And so he did take the money from his girlfriend's dad.
He did not.
How do you get the money to open this bar then? God.
He got the money because he worked it.
I
don't know if you know something about some time between you. The thing you complained about in the first act is exactly the thing that happened in the second act, which was the fact that over time he had saved some money doing that.
He had saved enough money to open a singles bar in Manhattan, which would cost
segment. I'm allowing you one question to me from that movie. I will answer.
One question.
Yes. And I'm kicking you out of the studio. And we're going into our first guest.
When Tom Cruise is with his sugar mommy at the art gallery, they're back in New York, Lisa Baines. They're in the art gallery, and she's treating him very, you know, rudely, and he's getting kind of drunk, and he asks, or he says to the artist, "What does your sculpture resemble?"
How did you get the cockroaches to?
Yeah, you got it.
100%. Once again, thank you, Stephen Kahn, for coming in and doing our Netflix Q review. Thank you very much. We're going to go right into Michael Colomeco after this break, who is our call-in. I really appreciate it. Thanks, Stephen, for your time.
No problem.
For my shoe, you know about that, babe. Had them all walking blue. Woke up this morning, I feel around for my shoe. You know about that, baby. Woo, Lord, I had them all walking. This morning, I have to go ride the blinds.
Thank you, Eric Clapton. We're back. The reason why I play that song is for our next guest, Michael Colomeco, who is the best way to describe him is he's a chef's chef. Even though he hasn't been in the kitchen for a really long time, he's somebody highly respected by everyone in Manhattan, highly respected by myself, and he's somebody that knows basically what's going on, hence the book he wrote, Michael Colomeco's Food Lover Guide to New York City, and on top of his show on PBS, which is highly watched and highly respected. I would like to thank Michael Colomeco to the show. Mike, are you there?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
It's really you.
It is really him. That's my co-host, Annie Llewellyn. Mike,
we've actually met.
We spoke a couple of days ago, and I think the first thing we kind of talked about was how much There's a lot of guides being thrown out there in New York City, and there's a lot of information out there with the internet. But if anyone listens to Mike's show on the radio and knows his credentials and everything, I mean, this, and when I ran into him in front of Joe Doe, I mean, and being somebody that works in the city, he knows, like, everything that's going on. And his book is sort of a great guide for anyone that's traveling into the city, anyone from an outer borough, from the tri-state area that's coming into Manhattan and wants to have something to eat and where to go. And Mike, can you talk to me a little bit about how that book came to fruition and, you know, and where it's
at? Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. It's a book that I really wanted to write for a long time. I arrived in New York in January of 82 as a young culinary graduate from the CIA and cooked for about the next 7 or 8 years in the city before I decamped to open up a seasonal restaurant down in Jersey. Came back to New York every winter, so I, you know, have had a long look at the restaurant scene, and I know a lot of chefs. I mean, it's like basically it's the fish tank that I'm in, and it seems that, you know, Zagat Guide came along and it just changed everything, right? I mean, that was a brilliant. By the way, they just sold it for $200 million. Yikes!
Yeah. So who did they?
But yeah, I mean, when Zagat came along, it was sort of the game changer. Because prior to that, you know, Mimi Sheraton would write a book, or somebody that was who had been around for years would write a book, and it'd be a guide. So I had used Food Lover's Guide to Paris, Paula. Excuse me, whatever her name is. You know, it's a great. She's one of my heroes. Patricia Wells, excuse me.
Yeah,
it was just a great book. When I used to travel to Paris, you only have so much time, and I would just, you know, I'd take her book and I would check off the page, and if she said go to a restaurant for this dish or go to a restaurant for this style or go to a bakery for their baguette, she was always right. And it just seemed like in the post-Zagat era that New York didn't have a guidebook that had any point of view. They were all just diluted down two or three generic sentences, dress code, price list, address. So, you know, I was happy to get this thing done, but the nature of publishing is tough. You know, there's a cost reason you don't see many more of these guides, and that's because publishers are just, they're loath to take a chance and publish them.
Michael, I have a question for you. I'm a huge fan. We met not long ago,
and she's a Philly girl.
I'll enchant you with the story of how we met later, but I have a question for you. I know that you are from Philadelphia, and I want to know where in Philadelphia are you from.
I spent a lot of time in West Philly in Overbrook, which was
right?
A little like
it. Isn't it the
you,
best?
If you're from Overbrook, you'd say you were from like St. Donata's Parish, which is where my parents were married, and I was probably baptized.
You're touching my heart, Michael.
I had my christening.
West Philadelphia is the heart of my heart, and also I want to know where in Philadelphia did you cook when you were there?
Well, I ended up, my parents got a couple of shekels together, and they moved us out to, like, the ghetto of the main line. So I worked, my very, very, very first restaurant job was in a deli called Jaime's, which was on Montgomery Avenue in, I guess it's Marion or Ballack-Kenwood, where I started in the pot sink and ended up doing,
that's
like,
pretty she right now, Mike. Like, that is, like,
now
the
it's,
most...
Well, but it wasn't, when Mike worked there, it wasn't...
Actually, it was pretty good back then, and it's
bet.
A long story. The owners, it's a very, very long story, but I'm still friends with the owner's son, because we were high school and junior high school buddies. Hal Wilner, who's just an amazing music producer, he does all the soundtracks for Saturday Night Live, and he's brilliant. It was his dad's restaurant, and it was a pretty cool deli back then, and it was pretty exotic for me, because, you know, I'm an Italian kid, and now I'm eating, you know, lox and whitefish, and, you know, getting into this whole thing. I remember these people would get these bagel spreads delivered. They had a guy named Murray the caterer, and I used to help him put his trays together. I thought it was the good life. And so that was it. There was a place called Gadsby's, which was further up the road. That was where, like, the Philadelphia Phillies would come after games. It was a big deal. And
have you ever been to Moishe Itzy's?
Kind of job kids get.
Have you ever been to Moishe Itzy's?
No.
No, but...
Sorry.
But, When I ran into you in the city like 4 or 5 weeks ago, the show you do on PBS, how much of, like, well, first of all, can you talk about how many episodes air, and also how much work you put into putting that show out? Because, I mean, one, you need to get into a door and then sort of get into the place and do it, and, like, hot restaurants that are looking for a review aren't looking to have, you know, a camera crew in there for the first 3 months. Can you talk a little bit about how you produce that show? Because I know you also produce it as well.
Yeah, I do, and we've been doing it for 10 years now. And we're on these days every Saturday night at 6 o'clock. So we do 26 shows per year that air once in repeat and once in premiere. And, you know, the idea is I just kind of follow my nose. I mean, I don't know if I could do a show like this in many other cities, but because New York is what it is, because of the velocity of the place, there's so many restaurants opening. I don't listen to publicists. I don't really listen to anybody. I just kind of, I know what's going on, and if I like a place, I go there and I eat, and most of the time I just go in as, you know, if I can get away with it, I just go in and try and sneak a meal or two before anybody figures out who you are. It's getting harder and harder
to do.
That's
the thing. That's the thing we admire most about you, Michael, is that we know you have the inside.
No, he is so in. He's so in.
You're very in.
I was walking. I got out of work one day around 5 o'clock, and I'm walking to Prune, which is usually my, like, little Friday thing.
Prune.
And I'm walking down, and then my mom, who, you know, who's one of the big
culinary. He talks a lot about his mother.
Culinary
influence. He's a good Queens boy.
Culinary influence. I'm standing out. Culinary influence is in my life. Said, you know, would always have me listen to a show, and I listened to it. And I saw Mike, and then whenever I do inventories, and anyone here who's an industry person that inputs data entry, which is a big part of management, needs something to, like, kind of entertain them, and I always have Mike's show on. And I had seen him, I walked across the street, we talked about it, and that I always had his impression of how I knew him through the show. But when I talked to him directly, and I always knew he knew everybody, but...
Well,
I mean, I have so much respect for
that's the
for
question
Mike.
I have for you, though. You
know, no, like, he knows everyone. Right? Okay. So ask your question.
And here's my question. And I know... Okay. I'm just going to ask. Okay. Can you tell us a secret? Can you tell us something about the New York restaurant scene that people don't know or that we would be surprised to hear?
Whoa. No. The million-dollar question.
We know you know. Now dish.
The New York Times is made out of people.
Well, no, I'll tell you. I mean, this is an old story, but it's a funny one. And it's the kind of thing, it kind of it's a good little vignette on how tough this business can be. Way back in the day, I have to go, you know, sorry, because I like history. But when Monrache opened up, it was a huge restaurant. Okay, yep. Now it's Corton, but we're going back 20 years to the 80s when times
86,
were a bit different.
86.
So David Boulay is the chef. Drew Nieporn's the owner. Drew offers David a partnership. David says, no, I don't want to be a partner. I want to be the chef. So Drew's got three investors plus his money in the game, and the place opens up to just... 6 weeks after it opened, Brian Miller is at 3 stars. It was the game changer. It changed people's idea of French food, of casual French service. It completely opened up downtown Tribeca. It was a super, super important opening. And, of course, it launched David Boulay's career, which is still going on in spite of himself. So 9 months into it, they're just not making enough money to pay back the note, and David's famously slow in the kitchen. David's a chef's chef. He just doesn't care about anything except the food, and Drew's like, dude, we got to do 20 more covers tonight. I can't do 100 covers tonight. So they have a couple of meetings, and Drew is talking to David, and David doesn't get it. So Drew hires a new chef and an entirely new crew and trains them in stealth at the River Cafe. They make a new menu, and David Boulay shows up one Monday morning to open up. His shit's outside. The door's locked. He doesn't have a key, and the new crew came in.
Wow.
That was David Boulay. That's why Drew and David
didn't have a key.
Talk for like 10 years. But that Drew actually just said, hey, sorry, dude. I gave you every chance I could. New guys are coming in. It's a new game. Bye-bye.
And that ends, and that's essentially New York City in a nutshell. You have to move quick.
Sometimes the best thing that happens to you, though, is failure. And it sounds like for both of those men, the best thing that could have happened to them is that right there.
What Drew would say to David. It's like the best thing that me firing you is the best thing that ever happened. David did next was it took him a year or two to get the financing, but he opened up the old original Boulay, which was really one of the most beautiful dining rooms and one of the greatest dining rooms in the city.
And also we should change the name of Hudson Street to Boulay Avenue and Greenwich Street to Nieporent Way. But we're going to go into a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about guitars and Mike and why chefs kind of gravitate towards that. We'll also talk a little bit more about his career and Cape May, where he does a show from. Thanks again, babe. Bye.
But the honey's put it down. They say she's spooky. She's my
And we're back with someone who I really look up to a ton, someone who has influenced me a lot in my restaurant career as well as my soon-to-be radio career, Michael Colomeco. I had phrased in a pre-interview with Michael earlier this week, I had given him sort of a like an SAT question, which was, Joe Baum, Warner Leroy, is to Drew Neeport, Danny Meyer, as to... And then I asked him to fill in the blank. And Mike, can you talk a little bit about who would be the next generation after after those you know, two generations?
Well, it's really a tough question. It's complicated because it's so funny. You're spanning, you know, Joe Baum, you're going back to the 50s with the original restaurant associate group, Restaurant Associates. And then Warner was, you know, the 60s and 70s. And then in the 80s and 90s, and still into this decade, in a big way, you have Drew and Danny Meyer that were just game changers. I think the big shift now is I think that there's not, I mean, there's guys that we're not going to talk about, honestly, who are super successful, like Steve Hansen and Jeffrey Chatterer,
who
make a fortune.
Crazy
those guys
numbers.
Are impresarios of their own. But who eats at their restaurants? I don't. So they're successful business guys, like the Reese brothers maybe used to be. But I don't respect them food-wise. It's just they're, you know, they're running a business. It could be a drugstore. It could be a dry cleaner. They just get it.
Whoa.
I think one of the big shifts is instead of, you know, Drew and Danny came out of, Drew came out of the front of the house, and Danny just kind of came out of hospitality. Now the guys that are really putting together the little empires are chefs, and that's something really, really new.
So it's coming
guys
from
like
the
John
kitchen.
George, guys like Danielle, a younger generation of guys like, you know, the two Frankies, Zach Palacio, Michael White, that have multiple restaurants, deals pending that are in and out of the city.
Can I back you up for a
sort
second,
of
Michael?
Been able to do this.
Just tell us a little bit more about the people you just mentioned.
No, I mean, Michael, I think you're 100% right. I think if you really talk about a godfather of chef to restaurateur person that started off in terms of the limelight, it has to be Danielle when he went off to do Danielle and then left Sirio Marchione.
Right, but the next step, he's mentioned Zach. He's mentioned Zach. I just want Michael to give us his take on the people he just mentioned and what he thinks they're doing differently.
And the financial structure, and it's more...
The
people.
Financial structure is huge. Michael, we'll leave it to you.
No,
tell
it's,
us.
No, it's huge. I mean, that's the truth of the matter is, there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of talent. You know, it's a meritocracy. In a way, there's a lot of people that have a lot of talent. There's a lot of chefs that have a lot of talent and a lot of ambition. But the magic is to find a money guy or a team that you can work with that are patient enough to make sure they're there to help you do the launch. And they're patient enough to wait to get paid back. Danielle has one single backer. Drew, you know, for a while it was Bobby De Niro and a sort of a host of those guys, of, you know, famous money guys and Madonna and all that.
But it's not about money anymore. April and Ken have Jay-Z.
I mean, but I think with these chefs, Michael White's got one backer now, and that just really makes things easier for him. And for some of these other cats, they're just doing it sort of on their own. I mean, look, Gabe Stuhlman is 32 or 33. He had kind of a train wreck with, you know, when he opened up Little Owl that didn't work, and he was sort of forced out. And you know, like you said, the guy picked himself up, dusted himself off, and now 5 years later, he's got three of the hottest restaurants in the village.
You mentioned something
important. So it's interesting.
Important.
I mean, they're all a little bit different story-wise, but I think it's the key of being patient, finding the right money people, negotiating a good lease, having a good idea, and then being a leader and being able to pull it off. It's much harder than people think.
Okay, there's...
Well, no, I mean, we were talking... I mean, I think we should... Let's talk a little bit less about business, a little more about chefs. We're all
about food.
I mean, let's talk about... no, we were saying about chefs and how they gravitate towards...
towards guitars.
Yeah, no, music. No, Annie, because we were talking about this before at the bar and what you were thinking about.
Well, I worked with a chef who used to walk into the kitchen.
You agreed completely.
I still work with some chefs, and they walk into the kitchen and they say, "Who's on bass?" They want to know who's keeping the rhythm in the kitchen, who's on bass, who's leading the pack, right? And for me, that's the biggest like guitar reference I can think of. But yeah. I hear it all the time. In every kitchen I'm in, I hear people talking about music they love, the musicians they love, and I just want to hear what you think about musicians and guitars specifically.
Good
I think
point.
Guitars are the biggest line you can draw.
Good point, Andy. Thank you.
Yeah, it's you know, when I came up in kitchens, it was all French and German guys and maybe a few Italians and Swiss, and there was no music in the kitchen. It was silent. You worked and, you know, we chef, and you pretty much head down, you know, 14-hour days. And then as Americans took over, as Americans climbed up the ranks and became chefs, the kitchen dynamic changed a lot, and suddenly music became part of the background of a kitchen. So, I mean, you say you are, I mean, chefs talk about music. A lot of kitchens I walk into, there is a soundtrack all day long. It's somebody's iPod, it's Pandora, it's something, but there's music in the kitchen, and it's just, it's the same half of the brain. It's that creative side that cooking comes from, that improvisation comes from. And so it's never surprising to me to meet chefs who are, A, huge fans of music, really, really knowledgeable about...
What are you listening to right now?
Yeah, I mean, what's his name? Andrew Carmelini, you know, a side gig is he's like a musician. He puts together, like, hip-hop tracks. I mean, he's got CDs out there. Andrew's like this music geek guy. But, yeah, everyone wants to know, what are you listening to? What's playing? Because it's just, it's the exact same half of the brain. It's a wheelhouse to work
on. For me and my people, it's the band. How do you feel about the band?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, it seems... it's funny that you said about AC.
I want to know what Michael thinks about the band.
What do you think about the band?
You mean the band, as in Bob Dylan, the band?
And his band.
Yeah. Yeah, the band's classic, man. There's still, I mean, there's, I don't go up to Woodstock, but there's still vestiges of that scene up there and little hippie concerts.
I've never been. What's a good restaurant in Woodstock that you would recommend?
I don't know. I don't go up there. I don't go, I don't even know New Jersey, which is embarrassing because it's where I'm not, when I'm not in Manhattan, it's where I live, but
I
literally get in my car in Cape May, drive up to New York City, park my car, and all I can speak about with authority is the Manhattan restaurant scene and, you know, to some extent the outer boroughs. But not as much as I'd like. It's a hard wave to stay ahead of. You know, there's so much going on in New York. When you look at that, when the Times does that issue that Fabricant restaurants are opening, you know, it's just mind-boggling to think about all of these places. I mean, in my neighborhood, in the last 2 or 3 years, there's just been 8 or 9 great spots that just opened up. You know, the Frankie's opened up, Fatty Q opened up on Carmine, Reset opened up. It's just Spasso opened up. All these. So for me to stay ahead of that wave means I got to eat at all these places, eat at them a couple of times. Just doesn't allow for trips to Woodstock or out into Jersey.
And that's why we tune into your radio show, and anyone should buy your book. Mike, can you give us a couple of plugs in terms of stuff people should listen to before we head into our next segment, in terms of where can we buy your book and also the show on the radio on Sundays?
Oh, sure. This is where I shamelessly plug myself. Well, the book's available, most books, on Amazon.com. It's Michael Lemeco's Food Lover's Guide to New York City.
It's the only guy you need.
I don't know. I don't look for it because, you know, whatever. It used to be in Barnes & Noble and Borders, but Borders isn't here anymore. The radio shows, you could go to WOR's website, WOR 710 AM. It's called Weekend Food Talk. It's a podcast. Once a week, it's 2-hour freeform. And the TV shows every Saturday night on Channel 13 and whatever NJT is these days. But we're Saturday night in New York City at 6 o'clock, and it just chronicles the New York restaurant scene.
Well, thanks, Mike, for taking the time out to do the show. I really appreciate it. And we have to get together for dinner sometime and talk and actually just kind of chill out. I really appreciate, you know, your opinion and, you know, calling to the show. It's actually my first show, so thank you very much.
It was my pleasure. Continued success, and best of luck to both of you guys.
Thank
Go
you, Michael.
Go Heritage Radio.
Thank you. Go PBS. You can have it or want it, you have ever desired. All you gotta tell me now is why, 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 why. Welcome to the working week. Oh, I know it don't thrill you. I hope it don't kill you. Welcome to the working week. You gotta do it till you do it, so you better get to it. All of your family has to kill to survive, and this is waiting for their big day to arrive. But if you are after, you better be alive. Welcome to the working week. Oh, I know it don't thrill you. I hope it don't kill you. Welcome to the working week. You gotta do it till you do it, so you better get to it. I hear you saying it, this is alright. Sometimes I wonder if we're living in the same land. Glad you wanna be my friend when I feel like the children running out of hands. Welcome to the working week.
Hey everybody, we're back. Thank you for everybody for listening. Anyone that I asked to listen, I promise you that $5 check that I, you know, promised you I would mail to you would either go through PayPal or, you know, I'll send it to you directly, but, you know, $5 is $5, and I will send it out. Just, you know, just tell me where it has to go through to Facebook.
I'm confused. What's the $5 for?
It's $5 for listening. We're going into this is actually going to be every Sunday. We're going to talk to Laura Wirtz, who her and her fiancé, that's probably as French as we're going to get here, is from a website called 86list.com. And the 86list.com is a great service for restaurateurs, whether it be New York City or New York or the tri-state area or the U.S., can go on and just see real kind of industry posts. Laura, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Jason and Annie?
Hi, Laura.
Tell me about the hot job of the week.
All right, well, this week we have a hot job from a very hot restaurant right now. It's Frankie's 570 Spoontino, which
so
is on
right
Hudson
now.
Street in Manhattan.
Okay.
And they're really looking for a couple positions. They've got they have needs for servers and runners and hosts. So they're looking for experienced and energetic servers, runners, and hosts with strong customer service skills and experience in New York City and experience with Italian food.
Laura, I have one question.
Sure.
Everyone, servers and runners and hosts, what do runners do? Can you explain to us, like, in the restaurant industry, what is a runner?
Sure. A runner is the person that takes the food from the kitchen and brings it to the customer. So they know what person ordered what food, and they put that down in front of them. They also help clear the table and inform the servers if there's any questions or problems.
So they have to have food knowledge. They have to know, like, what's on the plate. What are they bringing to this person? Like, if it's oysters, which oyster is from where? Like,
Position numbers
they
also.
They have to know all the accompaniments to the dishes so that they can answer any questions.
Also, Lauren, thank you for calling me from 86list.com.
Which is a fantastic website.
And every week this is going
to
happen.
You.
Laura's going to call and she's going to tell us about it. So I want to get the sort of technical things out of the way in terms of for example, I'm going on 86list.com. If I'm a manager of a restaurant, is there a price incentive for me to do this, or like what's the like to get to post jobs? Tell me about the website.
Okay, so for both members of the industry, which is anyone that's looking for a job in the New York City restaurant industry, and then also hiring managers in restaurants, you can set up a free profile on the site and give some people some information about yourself, and that's free. If you are a restaurant manager and you'd like to post a job to the site, there are different price packages. One job posting is $25. That is a 30-day posting, and if you feature that job, it will appear on our homepage. We send out emails to all of the members of the site informing them of your job. So really it's a chance to not just be on a list of jobs, but also like have some give and take with some of the people in the industry.
Okay, great. Well, I don't know. What's going on in the studio here right now? Can somebody talk to me? Because I'm the only one that doesn't know what's going on. Annie, what's going on?
We're talking from Laura from 86 List.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. They're
and
making me
she's
weird.
Telling us about how the website works, which actually is kind of like the Facebook for restaurateurs.
No, I think...
Yeah,
that's a good way
to explain it.
Also, the great feature...
We also have messaging. You can reach out to other people on the site. You can reach out to other restaurants on the site. If you're a hiring manager, you can also reach out to some people if you like their profile and you want to see if they're looking for a job. You can contact them through our site also.
And the one thing I talked to Laura about last week is like, if I work at one restaurant and I want to work at another restaurant, can I apply to that restaurant? And is my employer going to know like that I'm looking for another job? You know, like let's say I'm a sous chef at X Kitchen. Can I apply to Y Kitchen and will X Kitchen find out?
You can actually put a profile on the site that is independent of your name and a picture of yourself, so that people can see your experience and not necessarily know your name.
So, Laura...
And you can contact people and tell them that your profile is on the site and they can check out your resume from there.
Well, thank you. I know you're up in Cape Cod right now. And then also, I wanted to periodically check in with you with... I know your fiancé is your business partner. Can you say his name, please, since I didn't write it
down
properly?
Absolutely. So, Greg Sanslaw is the founder of the site, and I'm the co-founder. He came up with the idea a couple years ago, and we've just been working to put it together and make it work for the industry.
100%. And also, I wanted to, we're running a little tight on time this week with everything. So I'm gonna talk to you a little bit next week about where you're at with your wedding. But I'm really excited about this because I think it'll be fun. I know you guys are getting married and you're starting a business and everything. Thanks again. We will talk next week. Anyone?
All right,
can you? Laura, what is it? It's
86list.com. It's 86list.com.
Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
Bye, Laura.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
So, one, I wanted to apologize to Laura later because, I don't know, everyone's looking at me. I got 25 people right here in the studio. I have social media people. I have my sponsors, so I'm sweating. I got the Wrath of Khan, who I'm about to kick out. I have Bennett, who's doing the photography for the show, but she hasn't taken a photo the entire show. And I have my co-host, Annie. And I have Jack. Jack is he's basically runs the station, and I want to make this guy happy. And I have Patrick Martins. He's not actually here, but I just feel him just looking at me.
He's hovering over me.
So we have 6 minutes left, and I went doing an interview with my sponsor, the name of the company, there's a management company. It's called Savorian Wines, and they have two brands. This is a wine company, and
it's
they
a
have
delicious
two
wine.
And
company.
The Bogotel is an amazing wine. It's their white wine that they do, and it's from Spain. And then he'll talk about it more because I just go on and on. Chad Turnbull, thank you for coming to the studio.
Jay, hey, thanks for having me here. And guys, before we get into everything, I don't know how many internet radio stations have Mike and Matt calling in here. I think we bet the right horse here, and to give any credence to anybody here, it's anybody that's listening, I think this is probably by far the best internet radio station, and not only that, the best internet radio program that you're going to see or hear on iTunes here, because not only do you get celebrities calling in, New York guys on AM radio, you're getting jobs, you're getting everything. I mean, this is like... Man, I wish we had this 10 years ago. You guys are so ahead of the curve. It's unbelievable.
Well, I wanted to say thank you for that. As much as I love all that stuff, I wanted to say thank you for saying it, because when you are the person and your company is the person that put up the sponsorship and stuff for the show, and I know you had heard the show a couple of times, and then we had spoken, and...
No, I'm going to make a correction. I heard you. And my partner and I, my business partner, Elke, she's German, and we were over in Europe, and I'm an American, and spent some time over there, and I heard you on the radio, and I said, you know what, we're going to break into the American market, and I said, here's a young cat that knows what's going on, and... You know, we contacted each other, and let me tell you, man, it's not about me. You know, I'm a business guy, and I have great wine, and that I know. I mean, I got magazines, I got all that stuff telling me great wine, but...
You have fantastic wine.
But it's you. I mean, you're going to get the message. You're going to help me sell more wine, but it's... I've been listening to iTunes, iPods, you know.
When I was doing the guest hosting with Patrick Martins on the show, and I know you had spoken about that, and but one, I listen, as much as I love this stuff, I just wanted you to, as my sponsor, I feel sort of like I need you to say a little bit about what your product is, even though you know you're sort of. So I know you're doing one. You have two brands out. One of them is Bogotel. The other one is El Raval.
El Raval, and both of them are Barcelona-based wines. They're very nice, but I mean, it's like anything else. It's. I think I was joking with you. We're here in Roberta's in Bushwick in Brooklyn, and I said, "Hey, man, I'm like Formula One or NASCAR. I'm your sponsor." Nobody cares about the sponsor; they care about the driver.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. He's like, we were talking about like. You gonna do good? I was like, yeah, of course. I'm gonna try and do the best I can. He's like, well, you know, no one cares about the driver. And I was like, I mean, Chad and LK are basically own this company. I don't, you know, exclusively. And I'm like, oh, I have the American guy that wants me to be Jimmy Johnson, and I have LK who wants me to be Michael either Schumacher, or I call him Shoemaker, even though he's one of my favorite drivers. But I know you're sort of, you know, you're tight on time today. You have a tasting to do.
Absolutely.
But I wanted to open up the studio to you whenever you wanted to come in, and I wanted to say thank you.
No, you're doing great, man.
And then also, before we leave, and I have to give a couple of plugs, I wanted to thank a bunch bunch of people. One, I want to send Annie Llewellyn out on assignment. Annie, where are you? You're heading out to where?
I'm going to Chicago. I've never been, and I'm really excited.
Are you going out with Will?
I'm going with Will. Will's
amazing.
Will.
We love Will.
Also, we're going to see his friend Jed, who will be turning... God, I want to say he's turning 30, but if he's not, I will be super embarrassed. Anyway, he lives in Chicago. He's getting a degree there, and we're going to see him and take him out for his birthday.
So I want to put you on assignment. You're going to be in Chicago. So
I don't even know. Like, what should I eat there, Jason?
Well, I'm putting you on assignment, and I'd love to make it all complicated. And as much as you know, I want to send you to Next, Olinia, and stuff like that, I want to send you to do a sort of basic... pizza review. Is that cool? All right.
I'm really excited. Right, you can't tell I'm like driving my hands up and down because I love pizza so much. It has everything a woman wants. It's warm rising bread dough.
Whoa.
And tomatoes. And, oh my God.
So I'm gonna have you do we're gonna meet myself, you, Will, and lady friend will go out to have dinner one night.
Maybe we should talk about like the difference between Chicago pizza and New York pizza.
So we're gonna have we'll have a New York experience, and then before you leave, we'll come back. We'll talk about Chicago. It's obviously different, but Chicago people get all bent out of shape and have their deep dish stuff. I almost feel like the deep dish is a way of them so getting more caloric.
Roberta's is the way.
But I mean, let's do Roberta's. Let's do that. So, well, actually, you know what? Today, since Roberta's is nice enough to sort of provide this entire menu, let's have a pizza here, and then when you go to Chicago, you'll talk about that. And then also, I wanted to give a couple of thank yous out there. Once again, thank you, Annie Llewellyn, for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know how busy it is. I'm not embellishing on that. I want to thank Stephen Kahn. I want to thank Bennett Jaslik for taking photos. I want to thank Windsor Meat for providing the proteins at the party we had last week. I want to thank Chad Turnbull and Chad. What is I don't know her last name. Sorry,
Elgin Delasota.
Oh, sorry, Delasota. Okay, cool. And I want to thank Jonathan Crowley. I want to thank everybody for listening. This is The Morning After. This is our first show. Thank you, everyone. Love you. Talk to you soon. Ciao.
This is a message from Fork and Anchor. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anchor, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today.